You're listening to KPFK and Melting Pot, and we have a very special group and guests in the studio with us today. The Corin Tucker Band is here with us. How are you guys doing?
Good.
Great. Hi.
Nice to be here.
Just really, really excited for you guys to be here, and you're going to play a couple songs and actually start off with a couple songs, so we'll just throw it to you.
Okay, this first one is called It's Always Summer.
All right, Corin Tucker Band here for you on KPFK.
Everybody ready? 1, 2, 3. The hotel bar stays open long. Party noise is audible. Monophone call 10 years long. Is our connection breaking down? It's always summer. It's always something. I say tonight is our first frost. Touch the windows while I look out. Turn up the thermostat one more time. Can't get enough of what I'm looking for. It's always summer. You job is hard.
You just heard music from the Corin Tucker Band performed live here in our studios at KPFK, and they're going to take a little bit of a break from the instruments and sit down with us for an interview right now. And I just, again, want to thank you guys so much for coming in. It's really nice to have you. It's during a period of time where things are really crazy here because of our fundraiser, and it's also, I imagine, a little crazy for you being on tour right now, too. So, again, thank you so much.
Oh, thanks for having us. Yeah, it's good to be here.
And also, this is going to, when it broadcasts, it's going to be on Sunday. So I definitely want to say Happy Mother's Day to you guys as well. Oh,
thank you.
Yeah. And it's kind of a good way to celebrate
mm-hmm.
my music.
Yeah, it seems especially fitting in a way, just because from what I've heard about the way the band got together, that there was a parenting connection that kind of brought everyone together. Could you say a little bit about how we got to this point where we have the Corin Tucker Band?
Well, I think that the original, part of the original idea came together when Seth Lorenzi, who's right here, organized a benefit in Portland for a place called Reading Frenzy, which is like a small
press zine.
Yeah.
Independent press shop.
Real
great resource to have in Portland.
And so anyway, he asked me to do a couple songs, and it was pretty close after the birth of my daughter. But I ended up writing a couple songs for that and playing with him, mm-hmm. and his partner, Juliana, was playing drums. And I think Seth just said, you know, you should really think about making an album. So I guess, what, like 3 years later, here we are.
How did you rope Sarah into this?
Man, I don't know. I think we got lucky.
Generous cash prizes?
Yeah. I think there was
waiting for those. Right.
Promises of
generous
cash prizes.
It might have been some chocolate and like
coffee.
Heavy bribery.
Yes.
And originally, and at least as I understand it, on the record, primarily you guys are a trio, but now here in our studios, you're a quartet. So what about the fourth member?
Right, that raised the ante even that much more to get me involved.
That's right.
Did he bribe you with the chocolate as well?
Yeah, right. Doubled down on the chocolate.
This is the the incomparable Mike Clark plays with us now.
All right. One of the things that I was kind of, I mean, it was kind of surprising, I guess, in a way, just because there had been not a long period of time after the hiatus with Sleater-Kinney, but it had been a fair amount of time, and it seemed like you'd kept pretty quiet artistically, at least. Can you tell me a little bit about kind of getting back into the music mode, kind of, because it seems like a really fairly short amount of time from doing The Benefit to write what I would imagine writing a bunch of songs in order to have the band and to record the album. Can you tell me a little bit about how you kind of got back into the swing of things?
Well, I think, you know, I like I said, I think I wrote 3, maybe 4 songs at the beginning. And then, you know, I think really I just took the time over the summer to write a bunch of songs, to work with Seth. I mean, that was the original thing. It was like, well, let's get together and, you know, bring a bunch of songs. I was like, oh, you know, like, I hadn't written in a while. So I pushed myself to kind of set aside like a bit of time at night, every night to try and work on some material. Mm-hmm. It was hard to like, you know, to kind of get back into it.
Was it really like a complete break pretty much since 2006?
Yeah, I definitely was like not doing music, and I had a second child, so I was busy with other life. But you know, it's like once you play a live show and you get that sort of zing back from doing something that you love doing, it's hard to not do that anymore. So I guess I just kind of felt like opening the door and doing it, you know, in whatever shape or form it kind of came in.
Mm. And was it kind of, you know, after kind of the genie was out of the bottle, did that just kind of the creative kind of flow out? Or was it more where you guys actually started to think, okay, we're going to be a band, we're going to make a record, now we need some songs? Which one was it, do you feel?
I think the first one, for sure. I mean, you wrote that record alone and then brought it in. Like, it came from a place and a time, and here it is. And I think now we're in a position where it is way, way more opened up, and we're trying to figure out, well, what can we do? What do we want to do musically?
Hmm.
And it's coming from a very different place.
Yeah, we're actually writing songs together as a band. It's a very different process.
And playing them in front of people. Like, the songs on the record were never performed live before they were recorded, right?
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
Maybe on
right.
The Benefit, really stripped-down version. But
yeah.
It's a different process when you get to, like, write a bunch of songs, take them out in front of people, see what reacts and like how they react, and it gives you a different perspective on it.
Yeah, that was one of the things that I was really interested in, because the record A Thousand Years has this really very finely textured sound, and it's not a sound that, in listening to it immediately, it would seem like it would translate 100%, or in at least in an easy way, translate to live performance. Was it kind of difficult having these ideas in the studio and then having to kind of bring them out on the road?
Actually, I don't feel like it was difficult for us at all. I mean, I think they've evolved since making the record. I think that we've sort of, you know, they've taken a step or two in different directions since we made that recording in a way that I think really suits our playing live.
Mm.
Yeah. We were lucky to, you know, have additional musicians. Some of the songs that have strings, we've had string players come out on stage, and it's great and it fills it up, but it's not like impossible to do without it. It's definitely not essential.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's with the four of you, it's a real full sound. I mean, just from the couple songs you already play for us, and not so dissimilar from what's on the record, which I think also is really interesting, just because a lot of times that happens, I think, to a lot of bands, you know, bands that don't have like the collective experience that you guys have, but they kind of have a real strong concept of what their sound is, but they're not able to translate it live. And it seems like that wasn't much of a problem, but I was really interested if it was kind of, we're making this record, as opposed to kind of trying to make a live version of what we are in the studio.
I think a lot of the songs definitely got very altered. I mean, Corin wrote them, and then we worked on them, arranged them, and that changed them quite a bit. And Sarah came in, and that changed them quite a bit. But the whole time, you know, we recorded the record at my house. I have a studio. And the whole, even if the songs had strings, if they had, you know, very, you know, production tricks going on, mm-hmm. I really wanted it to sound like, here is a group of people sitting in a room and playing the songs. Like, this is what's happening, you know, warts and all sometimes, but here's people playing actual music.
Mm.
So the jump to playing it live wasn't that big a deal, I found.
Mm-hmm. Thinking about the record, and even though the copy I got of it originally was a digital copy, I still kind of think of music with full-length records in kind of vinyl terms and like sides of music. And it seems like the first basic side of the record is very, very focused on themes of longing, though more kind of like hopeful longing, whereas the second side seems much more down and much more about either kind of regret, or it's more focused kind of on kind of dealing with the past, that kind of thing. Could you tell me a little bit about, you know, how you feel the themes and different narratives of the songs, how everything came together?
Well, I think that, you know, a lot of the process of making the record was in this kind of vacuum of community of playing music. I mean, I feel like the community of being in Slater-Kinney and being on the road all that time and being in a band was this really, you know, intense time of connection and everything. And then the time after that, you know, when I was at home with my kids and having a second child, I mean, there's a lot of isolation that happens, I think, especially for mothers.
Yeah, it's totally one thing. When you're a new mother, it can be a very lonely and isolating experience. When you're pregnant, it's like the whole world is just like supportive and so into you and all about you. And then like even up to giving birth. And then once you have the baby, it's like then it's just you and the baby alone going crazy.
Yeah, and I would imagine it in some ways it must be heightened for both Corin and for Sarah, for both of you. For being in bands and bands that for such a long period of time were on the road, like a lot, playing a lot of shows, recording a lot more than people generally do these days. And then to kind of step away from that, that isolation also must have been heightened in some ways.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, it's such a huge part of my identity is being an artist and being, you know, doing what I want to do and working really hard at it and playing all these shows. And, you know, I think that is part of sort of the conflict on this record. It's a deep conflict in between, you know, okay, well, how is that possibly compatible with being a parent of young children? It's, you know, it's basically not really, you know, that compatible. So, you know, that, I think that there's that, that's part of the angst and the doubt of this record, you know, is like, well, how do you say goodbye to this thing you love, or how could you do it in a different way, perhaps, I guess.
Yeah, that, in saying that, especially in thinking about Big Goodbye, in some ways that kind of fits with that. There's also the song, one of the other songs on that second half of the record that also kind of struck me that seemed almost kind of like the recession was maybe a lot in your head for maybe a lot of the songwriting, but especially for Thrift Store Coats. Could you maybe talk a little bit about that song?
Yeah, well, I really think that the recession hit Oregon really hard, and it hit Portland really hard. And, you know, being a part of the community there where, like, my son goes to elementary school, you know, I've gotten to know a lot of other parents and a lot of other people just, you know, in our neighborhood and in our city. And I really felt like, you know, in 2008, it was just my friends were losing their jobs right and left. And these were good jobs, like, you know, engineer, you know, computer programmer, like the middle class jobs were suddenly like that job doesn't exist anymore or there are no jobs for that. And, you know, we were just struggling to take care of the kids and pay our bills, you know, and it was just, It was really raw and really just seemed almost like an epidemic for, you know, like a period of 6 months was just, I was just kind of shocked. You know, that's kind of where that song came out of, was like, when are we going to hit bottom? Like, when is this, you know, going to stop getting, you know, like just rolling away with how many people were really struggling. So, yeah, that's just where that song came from.
Yeah, I just thought that, especially thinking about, you know, earlier periods of time or growing up in the 1980s and 1990s, especially in like independent kind of scenes, like, you know, people would shop at thrift stores and get thrift store coats, and you know, it was just a matter of style as opposed to necessity. And that, right. that kind of, like, there's a line in there, I can't recall the exact line, but kind of that, the line about, you know, like, we didn't, almost like we didn't realize how privileged we were until everything was taken away. And that really struck me, that kind of, I don't know what's the word, like that juxtaposition of, at one period of time, this was something people did for fun. And at another period of time, maybe even the same people are now having to do it out of necessity.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, I feel like, you know, for myself, growing up in the 80s and, you know, being a part of the middle class where, you know, you were just sort of assumed that you were going to be able to go to college and there would be money to borrow or, you know, funding or grants or scholarships, you know, and that the reality now economically is just so much darker, you know, it's just so much harsher, you know, especially for young people. And I just, you know, it's just, it's really, I don't know, it makes me really anxious. You know, like I worry about, you know, my kids' future and just, you know, I just feel like, you know, we really did. I mean, especially like, you know, being like in my 20s in the 90s, I mean, that just looking back on the 90s now, it feels like, wow, that was just like in a crazy economic time where people had so much money, you know, and, you know, and it was really almost a time of excess in a way. But now that is just gone, you know, in America, it seems like.
And well, at least for many, for some in some ways.
Exactly.
In some ways that excess still remains. But I think the thing about the 90s, we didn't really have a kind of collective consciousness about all this can go away. That middle class kind of dream and hope and expectation could go away and really only, you know, persist for a very small percentage of people that more or less seems like they've basically been fine. But the vast majority of us out of this, you know, past economic period certainly had a lot of things change. I see it. I also teach classes at a university down here in Long Beach, and seeing the changes that happen with students, some that aren't able to continue to, you know, with their education plans, or just that anxiety, as you were talking about, of what their future plans are going to be, what they're going to do, is something that that really is a marked difference from, you know, several years ago, but certainly from the 90s, where, you know, it seemed like almost anything was possible.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, just sort of talking about that and you know, bringing that to people's attention and saying, like this is, you know, this is, there's been a huge change in my lifetime of, you know, the kind of gap between, you know, rich and poor, and it just feels like that's getting starker and starker in this country, you know.
Yeah. You've always, in your songwriting from the early days with Heavens to Betsy and Sleater-Kinney, always had that very kind of deeply personal and sometimes overt, sometimes kind of slyly political kind of tinge to it. One of the things I was also wondering is whether or not the themes in some ways seem to change at the same time. They seem to be very similar, but has the kind of process that, or like the way that you work from those early days and kind of bringing these ideas and crafting them into song, has that changed significantly over your career, do you feel?
I think, I think writing songs, I mean, I really started writing songs when I was a teenager, you know, and I think that, you know, that was just maybe now, you know, that I'm a bit older, that there's maybe more of like an editing process that I try and go through with a song, or, you know, really trying to make each song a story, if possible, is something that I think is really an important part of songwriting. So, you know, if I do have an idea that I feel strongly about, you know, like just watching the recession happen and how, you know, just frustrating that felt, you know, it's like, how can you take that and make that into a story that people, you know, will kind of relate to? And, and you know, I mean, that's how the best songs are written, is they're written as stories, I think. So I think I'm still learning how to do that, but that's kind of my goal.
What's been the response to you bringing these new songs out to what I would imagine in a lot of cases are audiences who are pretty familiar with you and maybe some new people as well? What's been the response to this new music?
I think that, you know, that some people really like it. And, you know, I think definitely some people are sort of miss the, like, you know, louder kind of bashiness of Sleater-Kinney, and you know, and so there's definitely both reactions, but you know, it's been really fun to play live with this band, so I'm really enjoying it, and people definitely, you know, have fun at the shows, which is great.
Yeah, it seems like just from a lot
we
of
we also have loud bashy songs.
Sorry,
you would kind of have to.
Yeah. We also have loud dance.
Yeah, it's just there is that there, not that there wasn't a wide range of sounds with Sleater-Kinney or some of the other former bands you guys have been involved in, but there is, it seems like, a much more diverse palette going on with the Corin Tucker Band, which also seems to be about the different influences. I mean, that's one of the things that to me is really interesting also about kind of where Sarah's career has taken her from Unwound more recently. Playing in Hungry Ghosts, there's a very different style to that band, to the prior one, even though, you know, you're still kind of, there's still that Sarah Lund sound.
Well, I would also want to say that, you know, I think when we were first talking about the record and sort of planning, like, well, what will this feel like? What will it sound like? We were really curious in difference, you know, using strings, using piano, using acoustic instruments. But I think it's super important that all the music we do is genuine to us. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Like, I could never play, I will probably never play country music. I just, it's fine, but I can't, that's not in me. You know what I mean? So yeah. I don't think any of us would or could play music that isn't in us in some way. Mm. And it's nice to actually to reach deeper, I think, into all of
right,
us and find,
but not in a sort of fake way of like, well, let's just try and make a hip hop klezmer,
yeah, or a reggae version of one of our songs. Yeah. No, we would never do that.
Yeah. It's nice because it is a sound that's in the pocket, but it's kind of you know, like deeper in the pocket in some ways, because it does have a mix of some of the previous things you guys have done, but also, you know, sounds very distinctive and sounds very much in a particular place and not kind of referencing these other points in a strange way, just because there is such distinction to kind of the sound of your voice and your guitar and Sarah's drums, Seth's playing, like, it's all these things are really distinctive qualities, but at the same time, when it's all brought together, it has a very different feel from that previous work. Thinking about that previous work, one of the other questions I really wanted to ask you was just whether or not, in some ways, you know, Sleater-Kinney has this great history and this great legacy. Is that legacy? Is it something that you feel like that in, I'm trying to think of the right words. Is it something that kind of empowers you as you go along, or is it almost kind of like this weight that you kind of have to carry with you because people expect that certain thing based off of that history?
I think that, you know, I feel like it empowers us and, you know, empowers me and the band. I mean, I think that, I think, like you said, like all of us have drawn on other bands and other projects and other work that we've done. And I feel like, you know, that's experience that we draw on, and that's something that we, you know, can take and then, you know, put that experience and that dexterity into this new context of what we're doing, you know, and I feel like we do bring that to, you know, when we play live shows, that we bring all that history with us in a good way, you know, that that we do have our, you know, our loud moments, and but we're able to go to this other place and have these really quiet moments as well. So it's you know, it's a really fun feel to me of like, wow, you know, we've done all this great stuff, but, you know, we can draw on that experience and, you know, do something new as well.
Yeah. What have you guys already started thinking about the future of this band and kind of new sounds, new records, new music, that kind of thing?
We're definitely writing. I mean, we've got some songs we've been playing on this tour, some, you know, a few new songs, which mm-hmm. has been really fun. So, yeah.
Yes, we're in the frenzy of writing for mm-hmm. sure.
Okay. So this is gonna be a definite kind of thing, not just like a one-off project. You guys seem like really, really tightened together. I mean, it doesn't seem like sometimes when things like this happen, it doesn't really seem like the people are gonna stick around or they're gonna jump to another project or, you know, go back to doing something. But you guys seem like you have like nice camaraderie. You're not sick of each other just yet. You know, it really
say anything on that.
Yeah. But you know, it seems like there's, you know, kind of getting back into it has kind of awakened some new ideas, and like the collaborative process of you guys together really seems like it's kind of kickstarting additional things down the road, which is really exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I would say we're all busy people. Three mm-hmm. of us are parents. Mm-hmm. Most of us are in multiple bands.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. you know, we're definitely not. Yeah. We're not rushing to you know, we need to tour again next month. But I really feel like unspoken or spoken, it's really important that all of us give what we are. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And draw something from within us. And I feel like I'm. It sounds like that shows, and that's very flattering. You know, we're definitely doing this from ourselves, and it's for real in that way.
Very nice. I just wanted to ask a question, especially since, you know, here at KPFK we're in the middle of a fundraiser, which is the way that we stay on the air. A lot of community stations, non-commercial stations, do this kind of thing. He's pulling. Seth is pulling out money.
$2.
No. But you know, it's certainly the way that we do it, so that we can keep our freedom. You know, we're one of the few stations that doesn't take any corporate money. Most of our money comes from listeners, and it also strikes me that especially the kind of bands that you guys have been in have been bands that have gotten a lot more support from community radio, non-commercial radio, college radio. And I was wondering if you could say just a little bit about that, the kind of the influence of those kind of spaces, and just kind of how that's affected your career, and also just, you know, listening as a listener and as a musician too.
Well, I grew up in Eugene, Oregon, and the local community radio station there is KRVM, and I really grew up listening to that station all through high school, all the coolest shows, just the variety of, you know, indie rock and bluegrass and the Beatles. A to Z was one of my favorite shows. They played every single song of the Beatles from A to Z all weekend long, you know, and it was such a rich resource as a young person to have this non-commercial radio station that played everything and just, you know, just taught me so much about different genres of music, different kinds of music, you know. And I just think that it's kind of irreplaceable, you know, in our community, and we definitely want to, you know, support that as a band.
I used to have a radio show on community radio.
You did?
Olympia, KAOS.
Yeah. You had a show there?
Yeah.
Oh, at KOS?
Yeah.
Yeah, I knew about that station. I mean, because of the influence of, you know, all the musicians coming out of that area.
Uh-huh.
When I first started in radio in Atlanta and working at Album 88 in Atlanta, Georgia, and we would pay attention, you know, to playlists that other people played, and
mm-hmm.
and KOS was one of those groups, or yep. one of the radio stations, in addition to KXLU out here in Los Angeles and KLX in Berkeley.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's just that kind of... sense of discovery with all these different kinds of music that you just didn't hear anywhere else that Corin was talking about earlier.
When there were more regional scenes kind of too.
Yeah, totally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and especially back then because, you know, the internet was only starting up, so you didn't hear music from other people and you just like wonder, what, you know, why are they keep playing this band? Like, what does that sound like? We got to figure it out. We got to get it. Mm-hmm. That kind of thing. So yeah, it's not too surprising.
Was it all talk, sports talk?
It was all about cricket.
Cricket talk.
But you did do a music show?
Yeah,
this
summer? It was music. I rarely spoke.
What kind of music did you play?
I played the music of the time. I played, well, it was the early 90s, so there was some early 90s stuff and then some other, you know, 80s. It was mostly, the name of my show was Punk is Relative.
So, like, Johnny Cash is
punk. So, yeah, I played all kinds of stuff. I've always had a really huge, vast array of musical interests. So I kind of played whatever I wanted, like making a mixtape for someone, you know, just like, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And of course, the some stuff had a lot of repeats. Actually, Calvin Johnson had a show right after, right before me. And he would always make fun of me for bringing the same records every week. But
but you know, even there, with music that you don't really hear anywhere else, I'm sure listeners appreciated it.
Yeah, it was great too. I also had come from the Midwest, and so I had a little bit of a different, like the music that I was listening to in high school was maybe slightly different from what was happening in the Northwest. So I brought a little bit of my like Midwestern rock. You know,
stuff that maybe hadn't quite
John Cougar Mellencamp.
Yeah, right. Totally. Played a lot of like Jesus Lizard and Slint and like stuff those regional things instead of Melvins and Nirvana, for example.
Right. But. Yeah, it is. You know, it's always been a privilege to me to be able to work in this sphere, be able to do enough things outside of it to be able to continue working. You know, wherever I've been. And, you know, again, that's part of the reason why we're so really thankful for you guys coming in and to be able to bring this music out to audiences here in Los Angeles, in Southern California, and around the world.
Yeah.
Well, as I said, it's one of the reasons why we really appreciate you guys coming down and spending some time with us, especially as busy as this little mini tour is for doing that. We really do appreciate it quite a lot. And personally, I do as well. Because, I mean, Unwound and Sleater Kinney were very big bands to me and remain so and still listen to them. And so it means quite a lot that two of you here in particular, but really all four of you are here. And can we get maybe one more song, do you think?
Yeah, we've got one more for you. This is called Dragon.
All right. The Corin Tucker Band here for you on KPFK.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Thank you.
You just heard the Corin Tucker Band performing live in our studios. I really can't thank you guys enough for coming in. It was just amazing. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
Thank you. Yeah,
we appreciate it.
Here's one last song from the band, a track we spoke about quite a bit during the interview, Thrift Store Coats, from the Corin Tucker Band and their record 1,000 Years, here now on KPFK.
Up and down,